3 Senate bills on our docket today, and so I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 90, Engrossed. Kara, do you want to explain this?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 90A abolishes the Capital Planning Commission, and it transfers those duties that the commission did hold over to the Department of Administrative Services. The background was that the Capital Planning Commission was implemented in 1949. It was part of a long-range development plan for state-owned properties in Marion and Polk counties. The commission reviewed state agency capital development and facility proposals and coordinated planning to determine compatibility with area plans. The commission developed a long-term master plan for the Capitol Mall during the 2003 and then during the 2003 legislative session, the commission was suspended. A budget note at that time directed the Department of Administrative Services to use the Capital Project Advisory Board to fulfill certain aspects of the commission's functions and responsibilities. Senate Bill 98 permanently abolishes the commission and transfers those responsibilities to DAS permanently. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Committee members, your chair was appointed to the Capital Planning Commission just before we abolished it.
There's no relationship there.
I just point that out as a non-sequitur. I'm sure there's no relationship.
Madam Chair, it's not abolished yet, is it?
Well, that's before we defunded and moved its sort of functions over to this other group. And I'm going to ask Bill Foster to come up here and talk about what has gone on in the meantime.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Foster. I'm the administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services. And as the committee administrator indicated, there's a certain amount of activity that happened during the 2003 session that set this up. There was a budget note during the 2003 session that suggested that we fully establish the public review process that was originally envisioned for the Capital Projects Advisory Board, and we have done that. And since no action is not a viable alternative, there are really three options. You reestablish funding for the agency, you extend the suspension for 2005-2007, or you abolish the commission. And the Department of Administrative Services recommends abolishing the commission and has provided a vehicle with Senate Bill 90. Senate Bill 90 will retain certain definitions of the capital area and other related provisions that are currently in statute. It transfers the primary duty of maintaining plans for state properties in Salem area to DAS and the property owning agencies, adds a coordination requirement plan for all properties in the Salem area. In the Senate, the Senate General Government Committee asked DAS and the City of Salem to jointly develop an amendment to address some concerns that the City of Salem had raised. The amendment added a background statement and language to address the role of the Capital Projects Advisory Board, and that the board will have 2 members from City of Salem staff. The Senate passed the amended version of Senate Bill 90 without opposition. In the meantime, while there hasn't been a high level of activity with the Capital Projects Advisory Board in this area, those that have come seem to have done perfectly well, and we seem to be functioning quite adequately under this suspension.
Questions, Mr. Foster? When you say, I have a couple. When you say that you haven't had a lot of action in the 2 years, what action have you had? Have they, and does this then new, or it isn't new, but this, what do you call it? Department of Oregon Services, what do you call these?
Madam Chair, it's the capital projects.
Capital projects. That includes all projects statewide, does it not?
Yes, it does. And, Madam Chair, what we've tried to do is kind of, in the rule that we set up during the suspension and in the course of the meetings, we try to differentiate the two roles, that there is this overarching function of looking at budgets and that normal thing that originally was in statute, and then we shift to a specific review of Salem area projects and apply those conditions to the particular project. So, in effect, we might be talking about a project two times with the board in different manners.
And in, under the Senate amendments, when you added the city staff, they only come and talk about the Salem piece. Do they, are they added to the board at that time, or are they, do they sit at all times?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we had talked to the city of Salem, and they were willing to just become a member of the board. So they're permanently on the board for the term that we've set up for those members. And the provision, the in the amendment specifically says that in the future, one will be from the planning portion of the city of Salem and the other from the public works portion of the city of Salem.
Talk to me a moment about frequency of meeting, public notice, public input on this board.
Madam Chair, the board typically meets monthly, although there's times, there's kind of a cycle through the biennium where there's more work and less work, but, and so there's maybe months where they do not meet, but generally it's a monthly meeting. We set up a good process. We tried to reconstruct some of the public notification listing that the Capital Planning Commission had for a mailing, and then we have all of the information posted on a website. And so we would typically do a normal public meeting posting at least 10 days in advance of the meeting and set it up. Then through that portion of the agenda where there is a discussion of a Salem area project, then there's the opportunity for public input after that is heard.
Okay. Okay. Any further? Representative Cameron?
Yes, thank you for being here today. Just a question on the transfer of the employees. How many employees are currently supporting the commission and the transfer of those employees?
Madam Chair, Representative Cameron, there were two part-time. They were about 0.8 each FTE, and when the suspension occurred, they were let go. So there has been no employees supporting it other than we absorbed it within the Department of Administrative Services with existing staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much,
thank
Mr.
you.
Foster, for coming. And there being no further questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 90 and open a work session on Senate Bill 90.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 90 to the House floor for due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 90 as A. Engrossed to the correct, Representative Cameron, as
yes,
A. Engrossed
as amended
to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? So ordered. Because of my sort of past relationship, I will volunteer to carry this myself, members of the committee, and I will close the public hearing or the work session on Senate Bill 90A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 468. Carol?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 468 authorizes county surveyors to waive setting of required monuments during surveys of subdivisions or partition plat
when setting monuments is impractical under specified circumstances. Oregon law currently requires that mapping and surveying controls be filed for public record with the Office of the County Surveyor if public funds are expended on a project. Mapping controls are for surveying positions that are used to control the horizontal and vertical shape of the earth in the preparation of contour, topography, and other similar maps. Sounds like a lot of math. That's why I didn't go into surveying. Further, the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors and Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon assert that many counties have now established their own high-precision surveying control network, making the requirement mapping control unnecessary. And further, they find that placing the markers is sometimes difficult because of the placement of utility vaults and other things on the landscape that make it impractical for them to place survey markers.
Members of the committee, this is what I love about being a legislator. You get to learn about things that you wouldn't know anything about if we didn't have somebody named Chuck Pearson to come forward and tell us what we need to know, and it looks like Tom Gallagher's coming with him. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Chuck Pearson. I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors, and I'm the Clackamas County Surveyor. Actually, Ms. Fisher said it all.
Oh, when we understood it perfectly.
Well, I certainly understood
except
it.
Except I didn't use geodetic because I always trip over.
Geodetic. I won't even try and explain geodetic to you.
Thank you.
I promise it's too early in the morning. The bill basically does two things. It allows the county surveyor some discretion in the setting of monuments for new subdivisions and partitions, and it also removes the requirement that mapping control projects be filed in my office or in any county surveyor's office. These typically are short-term projects, but yeah, we get large volumes of material to file and keep forever and ever and ever. And then the permanent geodetic control, my county, we have no need for this. It goes in a drawer. We forget it. We don't use it, but the requirement's still there to file. And so this would allow the county board on an individual basis to waive that requirement. Some counties need the information. Some counties, like myself and Marion County and others, don't need the information. So it just clutters up our records and is expensive for the consultants and the public to pay the cost of preparing those documents.
Sir, are you telling me that this has been digitized, this whole function of the, is that what's producing this, or do you just storing maps for ever and ever because of the statute? And I don't know what mapping control is. But it sounds like losing maps isn't a good idea unless you have them somewhere else, just from a layperson's point of view.
Chair Berger, members of the committee. Mapping control is typically done when a jurisdiction or a private company involving public funds will go out and fly, for instance, aerial photographs of an area. And if there's public funds involved, and they have to control these, they can't just fly it. They have to know how high they are and how far it is from this point in the ground to this point so they can rectify their maps. If there's public funds involved, these positions are put on a report, which is very lengthy, and filed in the office of the county surveyor. The report will give a position, a latitude and a longitude, if you will, on a specific point, but that point is generally almost always not a permanent point. It's usually a 2x2 wood stake or a paint mark in the asphalt or something. And once those marks or those stakes are gone, the information is of absolutely no value to anybody.
But by statute, you have to file and hold it.
Yes.
And this changes that statute so you no longer have to file and hold it.
That's correct, Chair Berger.
Am I getting it? Yes, Representative Summer, please ask an intelligent question here. I've run out.
Sir, as I'm understanding your letter, GPS now can as accurately find a position as you could with the old monuments. Is that correct?
Chair Berger, Representative Sumner, that is correct. You can use the global positioning technology, and this is not the one that you go down to Office Depot or something and purchase. These are instruments that, for instance, we're budgeting in my office right now for about $100,000 for four instruments. So they're very precise and very expensive and take a lot of training to use.
Within feet, inches? How close?
One part in a million.
Wow.
Better than a Coke bottle on the ground.
So, very close, and say a couple miles.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair
Berger. Appreciate you coming. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing, seeing no one else who wants to rush up and talk at great length on this. And this is on Senate Bill 486, and open a work session on Senate Bill 486.
468.
468, sorry. Sorry, a little dyslexic there. 468, Denise. Representing Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 468 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representing Buckley moves Senate Bill 468 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? So ordered. Representative Buckley?
I would defer to my real estate colleague here, but I would be happy to.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Consent calendar?
You could do that.
Okay, consent calendar.
Make a motion we...
Consent calendar.
468 and a consent calendar.
Thank you. Representative Cameron moves it to the consent calendar without opposition. So ordered. Okay, I'm very resistant to consent calendar, but in this case, we'll do it.
No consent.
And
someone may ask for the mathematical calculations of the monument.
And I have to turn it off.
And I will close this work session on Senate Bill 468, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 577 as A engrossed. Kara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I already like this bill because it doesn't have the word geodesic in it.
Geodetic.
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 I screw it up every time. Senate Bill 577A allows the Oregon State Library to assess agencies for funds based on use by agency in addition to the number of employees an agency might have. The Oregon Law Library, on the other hand, will make assessments based strictly on number of full-time equivalent employees unless a different methodology is agreed upon between the Law Library and Department of Administrative Services and the Judicial Department. There is an emergency clause on this bill. When the legislature created the Oregon State Library's assessment program in 1993 as a way to save funds for the general fund, it directed that the allocation of the assessment be based on the number of full-time equivalent staff in each agency for the 93-95 biennium. The State Library was directed to bring back a plan to the 95 Legislative Assembly to allocate two-thirds of the assessment based on full-time equivalent and one-third on use by the individual agencies. And although this is the current assessment allocation, present law in Oregon Revised Statute does not authorize use of this method. So SB 577A provides such authorization and allows the State Library to go forward with that plan.
No questions of Kara. Our friend Jim Shepke is here to speak to us. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm director of the State Library, and your administrator did an excellent job of describing this bill to you. I would just add that we're trying to correct a problem in the statutory language that was discovered by Legislative Fiscal Office last October. We were past the deadline for us to propose bills to the governor for him to introduce in this session, so we were caught in something of a bind. We knew we had to deal with the problem. Our Assistant Attorney General agreed with the Office of Legislative Counsel that this was a problem, that we were not authorized to assess agencies based on FTE and use. So we're grateful that Senator Devlin introduced this bill in the Senate. It does fix the problem, but I need to emphasize that it does not change our current practice and the practice that we've had for our assessment since 1995. It doesn't change the intent of the Legislative Assembly in 1995 in directing us to have an assessment based on both FTE and use. I think there was a very deliberate direction there that we take use by the agencies of the State Library Services into account when we assess them for our services. This bill also doesn't change the practice of the State of Oregon Law Library. And so it really keeps everything just the same. It just fixes the statutory language so it aligns with our practice.
Questions? Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 577A and Gross. Open a work session on Senate Bill 577A and Gross.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 577 to the House Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation and rescind the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, Representative Sumner moves this Senate Bill 577A and Gross to the House Committee on Budget, rescinding the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Any objection? So moved. Thank you, Representative Sumner. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 577 and adjourn today's meeting of the House General Government Committee. Thank you all.